Hello and welcome to New World Witchery's Folk Magician's Notebook, episode for January 2022. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you also pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn Witch's Datebook, or your local Farmer's Almanac. Let's take a look at the moon for January 2022. Our new moon date will be January 2nd, and our full moon date will be January the 17th. The moon begins the year waning in Capricorn, making it a good time to prune back any dead branches or plants in your garden, as well as any dead weight in your life. Make firm decisions about your boundaries for the coming year. It transitions quickly to a new moon on the 2nd and then begins waxing through Aquarius, Pisces, and Aries, which makes it largely a good time for pest control and dealing with roots. So save up your eggshells to crush and put around your tomato plants. And if you want to make a tobacco tea spray to keep around the garden and keep pests off, it's a good time for that. It's also a good time to pay attention to your own roots and make sure that you're looking at things like ancestral messages, cultural ties and practices, and setting down the foundations for your practice in the year to come. The moon grows towards full in the week of the 10th through the 17th, swelling in Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer. Again, good for developing roots, but also good for getting started on long-term projects, since you've got signs ruling the chest, shoulders, and arms that can offer support and strength. You'll get the full wolf moon on January 17th, an opportunity for any magic related to the wilderness, hunting, such as preparing gun or bow charms for a successful season, and honoring wolves and dogs, who can be powerful magical companions, and powerful real-world companions. We head into the end of the month with the Lunar New Year starting around January 22nd, and another opportunity for renewal, giving little gifts to those you love, even just cards or messages of thanks, and beginning to think about luck and protection magic, as well as the color red, which is a potent magical color in many Asian and Asian American folk practices associated with the Lunar New Year. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Our playing card of the month is the Ace of Diamonds, meaning a letter, a coin, or a message. This is a card that's all about receiving news and information, and it asks that we look at what we know and what we need to know and figure out the most clear and direct way to get between those two points. A single diamond shines brilliantly, but allows you to see all of the many facets within it, meaning that you may need to consider a problem or a piece of news from many angles to fully understand it. The single diamond on the ace is also like an arrowhead, piercing through ignorance and landing in a bullseye as it carries your curiosity towards the knowledge that you seek. You can imagine this as a letter wrapped around an arrow shaft as well, flying swiftly to relay urgent and important information, or even as the shape of a little envelope waiting to be opened and share its news with you. The Ace of Diamonds can also indicate a little bit of money coming your way, or a simple, light blessing that gives you a boost in times of need. Our tarot card of the month is the Ace of Swords, which, like the Ace of Diamonds, is all about piercing ignorance. In traditional Rider-Waite-Smith iconography, a disembodied hand holds the sword upright, jutting up through a floating crown with branches of olive and palm leaves hanging down. The sword represents that direct, piercing power of knowledge to give us insight and intellectual power to handle difficult problems. And the hand's disembodied nature represents the abstractness of the world of ideas, and possibly the world of spirit. The olive branch represents peace, peace brought about through understanding and insight. And the palm promises victory, knowledge being our way of bringing order and meaning into the world. The card also hints at a potential shadow side, in that the hand grips the hilt very tightly, indicating that we often try hard to exert control over the mind in ways that can be stiff and unyielding. And we can see that the plants are no longer fresh and strong, but dangle from the crown limply, meaning that some of our gains through intellect are fleeting and need to be balanced by other forces. The crown leads us to see intellectual accomplishment as a noble goal, but also one that can lead to haughtiness and contempt, So within this card, we also have a reminder that humility must temper our intellectual pursuits. For our folk divination method of the month, we're looking at the 12 days prediction cycle. This practice, which dates to at least medieval English folkways, asks us to look at the days between Christmas and Epiphany, roughly December 26th through January 6th, as a way of forecasting the weather and the conditions of our lives for the coming year. The weather on December 26th represents the weather for January, the 27th represents February, and so on. These can be useful tools for predicting the rough curves and contours of the weather over the coming year, as well as getting a sense of how our own personal seasons will shift through the next year. So if you have a particularly dark or bleak day, it might be good to remember that that might be a particularly dark or bleak time period in your life and to prepare for that. Remember that in the midst of all this, we have New Year's, which means that it's time for other folk practices such as cleaning your house, first footing, which is ensuring that the first guest to cross your threshold on New Year's Day is a tall, dark man, which guarantees good luck in the coming year according to Scottish tradition, or keeping away from bad habits for the whole first day of the new year so that you won't repeat them in the year to come. Our witch's proverb of the month is, "The new broom sweeps clean, but the old one knows the corners." And now, a folk tale. The 12 months. Once upon a time, there lived a mother who had two daughters. One, a beautiful young woman named Marusha, and the other, a plain and contemptible girl named Helena. The gentle-hearted Marusha did not know how beautiful she was, so she could never make out why her mother was so cross with her whenever she looked at her, for Helena was her mother's favorite. Marusha had to do all the housework, tidying the cottage, cooking, washing, sewing, and had to take hay out to the cow and look after her and milk her. She did all this work alone while Helena spent time adorning herself and lazing about. But Marusha liked the work, for she was a patient girl, and whenever her mother scolded and berated her, she bore it like a lamb. It was no good, however, for they grew crueler and crueler every day. Her mother thought, "Why should I keep the pretty girl in my house? When the lads come a-courting, they'll fall in love with Marusha and won't even look at my darling Helena." And so from that moment, the mother and the sister began plotting how they might get rid of poor Marusha. They starved her and they beat her, but she bore it all. In spite of this, she grew prettier and kinder every day. One day, in the midst of January, Helena felt a longing for the scent of violets. "Go, Marusha, and get me some violets from the forest. I want to wear them around my waist and to smell them," she said to her sister. "Good heavens, sister, what a strange notion. Who ever heard of violets growing under the snow?" said poor Marusha. "You wretched tatterdemalion, how dare you argue when I tell you to do something? Off you go at once, and if you don't bring me violets from the forest, I'll kill you," said Helena threateningly. And so the mother and the sister caught hold of Marusha, turned her out of the door, and slammed it after her. She ran, weeping bitterly, into the forest, where the snow lay deep, and there was not a human footprint to be seen anywhere around. She wandered for a long time, tortured by hunger and trembling with cold, but at last she saw a light in the distance. She went towards the glow and came to the top of a mountain where a big fire was burning. Around the fire were 12 stones with 12 men sitting on them. 3 of the men had snow-white beards, 3 bushy beards of brown, 3 but the mustaches of youth, and the 3 youngest were barefaced and handsomest of all. None spoke, but all sat silent. Marusha knew these 12 men must be the 12 months. And right now, great January sat on the highest stone of all, his hair and beard white as snow, and in his hand he held a staff. Marusha was frightened and stood in terror for a time, but finally grew bold and said, "Please, kind sirs, please let me warm my hands at your fire. I am trembling with cold." Great January nodded and asked her, "Why have you come here, my dear little girl? What are you looking for?"
"I'm looking for violets," answered Marusha.
"This is no time to be looking for violets. Everything is covered with snow," answered Great January.
Yes, I know, but my sister Helena and my mother said I must bring them violets from the forest, and if I don't bring them, they'll kill me. Tell me, Father, please, where can I find them?
Great January stood up and went to one of the younger months, March, and gave him the staff, saying, Brother, take the high seat.
March got upon the stone and waved the staff over the fire, and so it blazed up, and the snow began to melt, and the trees began to bud, and the ground under the young beech trees was at once covered with grass and daisy buds. It was springtime, and there under the bushes were blooming violets with their little leaves. And before Marusha had time to think, so many of them had sprung up it looked like a blue cloth had been spread upon the ground.
Pick them quickly, Marusha, commanded March.
And Marusha picked them joyfully till she had a big bunch. She thanked the months with all her heart and ran merrily home.
Helena and the mother wondered when they saw Marusha bringing the violets. They opened the door to her, and the scent of the violets filled the cottage.
Where did you get them? Asked Helena.
Growing under the bushes in the forest on the high mountain. Helena put them in her waistband, and her mother smelled them. But she did not say to her sister, Thank you, or Oh, how I love these, but merely treated her with more contempt. A few days went by, and Helena was lolling near the stove, and now she longed for some strawberries. And so she called to her sister and said,
Go, Marusha, and get me strawberries from the forest.
Dear sister, where would I find any strawberries? Who ever heard of strawberries growing under the snow? Said Marusha.
You wretched little tatterdemalion, how dare you argue when I tell you to do a thing? Go at once and get me strawberries, or I'll kill you.
And so the mother and the sister took Marusha and pushed her out of the door and shut it after her, and she went into the forest weeping bitterly. Again, the snow was deep, and not a human footprint could be found, but she made her way through the forest to the Ring of the 12 Months. Where she came to the fire and said, Please, kind sirs, let me warm my hands. I am trembling with cold.
Great January again nodded and asked, Why have you come again? What are you looking for here?
I'm looking for strawberries.
But it is winter now. Strawberries don't grow in the snow, said January.
Yes, I know, said Marusha sadly, but my sister and my mother bade me bring them strawberries, and if I don't, they will kill me. Tell me, fathers, please, where can I find them?
Great January arose. He went over to the month sitting opposite him, June, and handed him the staff, saying, Brother, take the high seat.
June took the high seat upon the stone and swung the staff over the fire, which shot up and melted the snow in a moment. The ground was all green, the trees covered with leaves. Birds began to sing, and the forest was filled with all kinds of flowers. It was summer. The ground under the bushes was covered with white starlets, and the blossoms soon turned into strawberries in a minute. They ripened quickly, and before Marusha had time to think, there were so many it looked as though blood had been sprinkled all over the ground.
Pick them at once, Marusha, commanded June.
Marusha picked them joyfully till she'd filled her apron. She thanked the months with all her heart and ran merrily home. Helena and her mother wondered when they saw Marusha bring the strawberries, for her apron was full of them. They opened the door, and the scent of strawberries filled the cottage.
Where did you pick them? Asked Helena.
Oh, there are plenty growing under the young beech trees in the forest on the high mountains. Helena and her mother took the strawberries and went on eating until they could eat no more, but they never once said to Marusha, Thank you, here is a strawberry for you. After a few days, Helena had enjoyed all the strawberries and grew greedy for other dainties, and so she longed for some red, red apples.
Marusha, go into the forest and get me some red apples, she said to her sister.
Oh, dear sister, how am I to get you apples in winter? Protested Marusha.
Why, you wretched little tatterdemalion, how dare you argue when I tell you to do a thing? Go into the forest at once, and if you don't bring me apples, I will kill you, threatened Helena.
And so the mother and Helena caught up Marusha and pushed her out of the door. She went off into the forest weeping bitterly, and again snow was all around, with nary a human footprint to be seen. She didn't wander this time, but ran straight to the top of the mountain where the fire was burning. The 12 months sat there around the fire. Great January sat upon the high seat.
Please, kind sirs, may I warm my hands by your fire? I'm trembling with cold.
Great January nodded and asked her, Why have you come here again, little Marusha? What are you looking for?
I am looking for red, red apples.
It is winter now, and red apples don't grow in winter, answered January.
Said Marusha sadly, But my sister and my mother, they bade me bring them red apples from the forest, and if I don't bring them, they will kill me. Tell me, father, please, where I can find them. He went to one of the older months, September, and handed him the staff and said, "Brother, take the high seat." September went to the high stone and swung the staff over the fire, and the fire began to burn with a low red flame. The snow began to melt. The trees had leaves that turned crimson and gold and orange, and a cool wind drove them to and fro over the ground. There were no flowers, only high fern and thick ivy growing under the young beech trees. But there, in the distance, Marusha saw an apple tree with red apples hanging high among its branches.
"Shake the tree at once, Marusha," commanded September.
And gladly Marusha shook the tree, and one apple fell down, and then another. She gathered the two up into her apron.
"Quickly, run home," said September,
and Marusha obeyed. She took the apples, thanking the 12 months with all her heart, and ran back to her house. Wondered when they saw Marusha carrying apples. They opened the door, and the young girl gave her family the two apples.
"Where did you get these?" asked Elena.
"Oh, there are plenty of them on the high mountain in the forest."
"Why didn't you bring more? Did you eat them all on the way home?" asked Elena harshly.
"No, dear sister, I didn't eat a single one. But when I shaken the tree once, one apple fell. When I shook it a second time, another apple fell, and they wouldn't let me shake it again. They told me to go straight home."
Elena began to curse and abuse her sister, and her mother joined in.
Marusha began to cry bitterly, and prayed that God would take mercy on her. She ran away into the kitchen. Greedy Helena stopped cursing and ate the apple, and it was so delicious she told her mother she'd never tasted anything so nice in all of her life. Her mother loved it too, and when they'd finished they wanted more.
"Quick, get our coats. We'll go into the forest ourselves. That ragged little wretch would eat all these apples up again on our way home. We'll find the place, and we'll shake down every last apple, however they shout at me."
And so mother and daughter bundled in their best furs and ran out into the forest up the mountain. The snow was deep, and there wasn't a human footprint to be seen anywhere. They wandered for a long time, but the desire for the sweet apples kept driving them on. At last they saw a light in the distance, and they went towards it. They climbed to the top of the very mountain where the big fire was burning, and on the 12 stones sat the 12 months. At first they were terrified, but they soon recovered. They stepped up to the fire and stretched out their hands to warm them without asking so much as a "by your leave" or a "please." No, they didn't say a single word to the months. But finally, Great January said,
"Why have you come here, and what are you looking for?"
"Why do you want to know, you old fool? 'Tis no business of yours," replied Helena haughtily. She turned away from the fire and went into the forest.
Now Great January frowned and swung the staff over his head. The sky grew dark in a moment. The fire burned low. The snow began to fall as thick as if the feathers had been shaken out of a down quilt, and an icy wind blew through the forest. Helena couldn't see one step in front of her, neither could her mother, and soon they fell into snowdrifts. Their limbs grew weak, and they began to slowly stiffen. The snow kept on falling, and the icy wind blew more icily than ever. Back at the cottage, Marusha kept watch by the door, wondering and wondering and wondering. "Oh, what has come to them?" cried the girl, peering anxiously through the window. The sky was bright and the earth was glittering, but there was not a human soul to be seen. Finally, she shut the window, crossed herself, prayed for her sister and her mother. And in the morning she waited with breakfast, and in the evening she waited with dinner. But however much she waited, it was no good. Neither mother nor sister ever came back, and both had frozen to death in the cold forest. And so good little Marusha inherited the cottage, a piece of plowland, and the cow. She married a kind husband, and they both lived happily ever after. The story of the 12 months is a lovely little tale that comes out of Eastern European Slavic folklore. And one of the delightful things about it, I think, is that it talks to us about seasonality, paying attention to the world around us, and acting with compassion and care towards not just the world, not just the things in it, but the very seasons themselves. By being respectful of our environment, by being respectful of the way that we interact with what the world has to offer us when it has to offer us those things, and we become better stewards of the land that we are given for the time that we have it, better participants within sort of the cycles of nature. It's one of the things I really, really enjoy about a story like The 12 Months, is that it reminds us that, yes, sometimes nature can give us gifts out of season, but those gifts can come with tremendous costs, and that we shouldn't take them for granted when we receive those little blessings. And more importantly, we should learn to work within those seasons and movements and cycles of time around us. That's one of the things I hope that with this almanac we're able to accomplish, is a better sense of what that seasonality is like and what it's telling us as we move through the months and pay attention to the way that the moon is shifting in the sky, the way that our own practices can shift and adjust with each passing month. This is the kind of story that can help to instruct us about being ready for change, being prepared for the way that the world may be different in the future, especially given things like climate and climate concerns, climate change, that we may have to make adjustments to new cycles of climate, to new ways of interacting with the world. But we have the ability to do so if we will listen and pay attention and act again with compassion and care to those who are being displaced or those who are being caught up in these changes that they have very little or nothing to do with. So I hope that that tale serves as a reminder about seasonality and being connected to this world around you, as that's at least what I take away from it. I'd love to know what you think too. We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time, we're going to talk about eating your luck. This is a practice that is really common at New Year's when we prepare lucky foods to bring in luck. For example, I grew up in the South, where one of the things that we eat every year are black-eyed peas and greens, usually collard or turnip greens, with the idea that these things represent money or good luck or abundance or resources. We oftentimes also include a dime or silver coin that's thrown into usually the greens to add a little bit of that sort of financial well-being to the sort of prosperity pot that we're having, right? I currently live in a place where I'm surrounded by a lot of German immigrant community. So, for example, I'm in sort of the Pennsylvania German area, and one of the things that is really common here is to eat sauerkraut and pork, both of which, again, are sort of connected to the ideas of prosperity and well-being. Sauerkraut in particular, cabbage, which even is a folk term for money, right? And you have this idea of eating these foods that are, again, connected to prosperity and well-being. Again, the dime or the coin is sometimes thrown into the cabbage or the kraut as it's being processed. But I will say, if you are intending to include something like that, make sure you wash coins really, really well before you include them in any cooking that you're doing. You never know what toddler has had that thing up their nose lately. So you could also maybe take an early jump at making a king cake at this time of year, since we're going to be, by the end of the month, moving pretty close to Mardi Gras. King cakes are a traditional creation in places like New Orleans, which have a strong sort of culture of the Mardi Gras Fat Tuesday right before Lent. And what these are cakes that are baked, they're just kind of a dense pastry cake that's covered with sugar and icing and things like that, usually in some pretty colors. And there's oftentimes a coin or a bean or sometimes even a little baby, like a little ceramic baby that gets baked into the cake. And then whoever gets the token, they get a certain blessing for the coming year. So if you get a coin, then you're supposed to get money for the coming year. I think similarly for the bean. If you get the baby, you're actually obligated to make the king cake next year. So it's both a blessing and, you know, potentially a responsibility too. So you should probably look to your own culture as much as you can. That can be the culture that you grew up with. It can be the culture that you currently live in. It can be one that you've been adopted into, whatever that is, and see what those sort of food-based charms are for this time of year. Some people like to do some sort of creative riffing on this. And don't be afraid to, you know, sort of make adjustments that fit with your own traditions and your own life. So, for example, my wife is not a fan of black-eyed peas, despite both of us being very much Southerners. But we have a recipe for something called cowboy caviar, which is basically chopped bell peppers and black-eyed peas and corn and some other things like that, that you then sort of marinate in a light vinegar dressing. And it becomes almost like a salsa, so we can eat it with chips. And she doesn't mind it so much that way. So we get our black-eyed peas pretty effectively doing that. One of the ways that I like to do the cabbage and pork is to actually get egg rolls. I like to get Chinese food on New Year's Day and make sure that I get some pork and cabbage egg rolls to go along with it. So those are some adjustments that I've made just sort of based on my own preferences that still connect to this traditional practice, but sort of allow me to work within this sort of new format as well. Just as a sort of way of thinking of that and a way that I adjust it, but your mileage may vary on that, of course. That's it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook for January 2022. Thank you so much for joining us this month. We hope you have a wonderful month ahead of you. If you'd like to help support the show and our work, you can do so by going to patreon.com/newworldwitchery, where you can donate $1 a month or whatever you can afford to get access to all kinds of fun little additional things as well. We do bonus episodes. We have little additional publications that come out. We have an awesome Discord server where people love to chat and share folklore, all kinds of stuff there. You can also find us on all sorts of social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Vero, YouTube. So all kinds of places that you can find us. Hopefully you'll stop by and check out some of those spots as well. And of course, if you're interested in learning more about folk magic, you can go to our website, newworldwitchery.com, where we have over 200 articles on various types of folk magic, plus over 200 podcast episodes on folk magic in North America as well. So please feel free to check that out. If you like what we do, please consider subscribing to us and leaving us ratings on places like Spotify or particularly Apple Podcasts. Those help other people to find us and help sort of boost our signal kind of around the world. And don't be afraid to share us. Word of mouth is great too, or sharing us around your social media of choice too. That will about do it for us this time around. We hope you enjoy this. And again, thank you so much for listening. Be well.